Let's go into We're in the Ninth Chapter. Now, I'll give a bit of a recap, because some of you missed, I think. Basically, okay, the overall structure of the chapter so far, the overall structure of the whole Shire, the whole gate, has been around this relationship between what it is that we do and what impact has on all the inner worlds and so on. And we looked at the basic first stab of an analogy, and being the image of God means just like God is the Balakoich Eskulam, he's in charge of every power and force that happens. So we're like the soul to all of that stuff, right? To everything going on in the world. And then we realize that's not a perfect analogy, and he's been refining it. And one of the points is, in other words, there is a causal relationship between everything we do and all that happens in those worlds, all the way down to here. But it's not as simple as I want to move my hand and my hand moves. We're not consciously manipulating or willing it, and we don't control the laws and the systems and the rules. So then what he began to introduce is this issue of the Keruvim. So the Keruvim in the Oren, inside the Ark, are facing one another. And in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, they literally faced each other. And in Shlomo Melech, when King Solomon made it for the first Beis HaMikdash, they were not quite facing each other the way the Pesukim describe it. At the same time, we'll see today, there is still a relationship going on there. But the description that of can here, they're doing Ritzon HaShem Makom, they're doing God's will here, they're not doing God's will. In other words, the Keruvim face one another, right? They look like structures of male and female, or like a bit like some depiction of an image of the equivalent of an angel. But their point is them representing the man-God relationship. And so if they're looking directly at one another, it means the relationship is directly, so to speak, face-to-face. If they're looking away from one another, it means the relationship is so to speak, not quite face-to-face. Just wait one sec. Sorry. Okay, thank you so much, sweetie. Thank you. Okay. So the relationship is not quite face-to-face. And the question is, why would Shlomo Melech, why would King Solomon build it saying, I want to build it not quite face-to-face? Well, what's he doing? As if to say, we're not quite looking at each other, us and God. Right? You're in the middle of trying to build the Beis HaMikdash and bring Mashiach and perfection. What are you doing? So then he spoke about two paradigms, a machlokas in the Gemara, a whole debate that takes place between Rosh Hashanah Yochai and Rav Yishmael as to how should a Jew live? Right? What's the ideal? And he says, on the one hand, you've got Rav Yishmael's approach is you see from the Pesukim in Vayom Shemaya that you're meant to be working, Vosafta Daganafa, you're meant to gather your crops, right, etc., etc. So you're meant to work in the world. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, that's not the ideal. The ideal, if that's the case, no one will ever learn Torah. Dedicate your life completely to Torah and to Hashem. Okay? So we got two different paradigms. And the Gemara concludes there seemingly by saying that many tried like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and didn't work. But according to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, what Rabbi Yishmael says, anyone who's not dedicating 100% to learning Torah is called Ein Oser Ritzon HaShem Makom, not 100% doing the will of God. Okay, so that's what we set up as the two polarities over here. And what we're going to discover now, Rav Chaim Volozhin will tell us, is in different generations, there's a different right approach. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said total dedication to God. That's the ideal. Rav Yishmael. You should be they both agree that the maximum amount of time you can dedicate to studying and keeping Torah mitzvahs as you do. They were, Rav Yishmael's half like a generation above. But they're almost for sure overlapped. Yeah, same sort of time. Rav Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva are the ones who argue, and then Rabbi Akiva's student is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. But they. Okay. Now, so here we are in the ninth chapter. V'nedar ha-midbar, the generation that's in the desert. She'zochel yismarichai shulchan gavoya. They merited to be those who ate from the above. What does that mean? Lechem l'shamayit v'ayim b'yam. We're talking about the mon. Now, there's a deep point here that he's not going to make explicit, but it's implicit, which is the way you eat food is indicative of the relationship with God. They were a nation, they were people at that point on a level so high that you could experience national prophecy, receive the Torah. And the food that they ate at that point reflected that by being called a Shulchan Gavoya, the table of God. And that meant, amongst other things, it was miraculous. There was no waste product from it. Okay? Everything was ingested was exactly what's needed. And not only that, Simlosim lo balsam alehim, the Torah tells us that clothing didn't leave them. So they were living on a level of such intense connection to God that the physical laws around them began to bend towards more open revelation of God, not the way the normal person natural decay works in the world as we understand it. So that's the generation of the desert. Therefore, they were at a level where they did not need to work at all in the world. There was no problems with their clothing. Their food was provided miraculously at a doorstep. There was no work for them to do. So Ledivra Kol there, both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai would agree that for that generation, you cannot call it fulfilling God's will, unless they were completely dedicating every fiber of their existence and being to God and service of God. And putting over the heart, rack the Torah of Avoda, only for Torah and service of God. This phrase that he just used, mistaplin kapei mala, looking above, and mishabdim es libom, committing their heart, is based on a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that says, when Moshe Rabbeinu took the Jewish people to war against Amalek, he had to put his hands up. They'd win. If his hands went down, they'd lose. And the Mishnah says, what? Hands win and lose wars. It means when his hands went up, the people were committing their hearts and actions to God. And when his hands were coming down, they were not. And later on, you also have the question of the snake. Right, the snakes are attacking the Jewish people in Parashas Chukas, and Moshe Rabbeinu puts up a big copper snake, and when they look up, they get saved. And again, the Mishnah says, "What snakes heal?" And what is it? Like a copper snake heals you or kills you? No, it's saying that as they looked up, they dedicated their heart to God. Now, later on, he's going to in the third shari, he's going to actually discuss a whole deeper level of this. He's dropping lots of points in now that he's going to pick up later on and really fully flesh out. Okay, but the point he's saying is, if you're on that level where your need for the natural has almost evaporated, then clearly the only way to be serving Hashem completely, everyone would agree, is total dedication every day to your mind, connecting to God, learning His Torah, keeping the Torah. There's nothing else to be doing. Anyone who's at that point, like measuring out mon backwards or forwards 15 times and trading it, is just wasting their life. They're clearly not on the right level. So on that level, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Shmuel would say for the people in the desert, they have to dedicate their existence completely to Hashem. No intermediary. And that's why the Kruvim for that generation had to face exactly each other. There's nothing else going on but pure, pure connection. Higher, why is that lower? You could, yes, I think the simple reading is this is the most ideal level. Now you can argue you have to bring Torah down even lower, but the point is that if, like, we get to Mashiach and Olam Haba, that's what we want to be, that we're not having to do, you know, go to work and have to do all this stuff. We can completely undistractedly focus on Hashem. Okay, so and also the fear of God, Yom Valayla, day and night, La Yomush PM. Again, these all plays on different things that they should not ever leave their mouth. Dvarim Kichsava Mamash, literally. Belina Toysel Atzat Klal, without tilting slightly to the side. There was nothing else to worry about. Afshar Kala, not even for a single moment. Leisik Paranosat, have to work in Paranosat. The most they had to do is walk outside, gather mon, and literally put it inside their mouth. I mean, that was as far as they had to go. In the Medrash, the Torah was given to those who ate mon, i.e. to that generation which could dedicate itself entirely to God. So then they established the Kruvim, Moshe Rabbeinu, Betzalah, when they built the original Kruvim in that, on top of that ark, in the Mishkan, in the home of God in the desert, that was going to be 100% face-to-face without tilting aside, because that was the way to serve Hashem correctly in that generation, was completely 100% without tilting to the side. Right, Laharis wanted to show that Hashem will shine ponim upon him, face to face him, Kadoshay, with his holy nation. Omnom, however, in the days of King Solomon, where there the general masses did have to, by the times of Solomon, be farmers and be working at least a little bit in working in Parnassah, I'll call upon him kadei chai nefesh, at the very least, the amount you need to live that day. So if you need to harvest a certain amount, then you have to do it. Now, Rabbi Shmuel holds that is that for most people outside of the generation of the desert is exactly what Hashem wants us to do. The Salvage of the Rabbin Tvei. Rabbi Shmuel would say that's for most people the ideal to be doing. Right? The Mishnah there says, that is good to have Talmud Torah together with some Derech Eretz, which he's learning here, meaning working in the world. Any work that doesn't have with it, any Torah that doesn't have some work with it, it could be lost and cause sin. And remember, everything in Maseches Avos, the Gemara says, is really Midas Chasidus, that means beyond the letter of the law. So beyond the letter of the law includes having to work. But what's the ideal Chasidus, like perfect level of serving Hashem in a world where you got to do some work? So your heart is all the time, right? These are plays on words in Kaddish, but all the time, the mind and the will and everything is trying to just, what can I serve Hashem? How can I serve Hashem? L'chein ha'amidu oz b'tchilas ha'kruvim. So therefore, in Shlomo Melech's time, when they made the Beis HaMikdash, they built the Kruvim. L'fi ma'asheh yotzoyot, Eisim Makom, the way they served Hashem, which was p'nei m'tzudot ha'mat. They're facing each other, but slightly tilted away. Okay, slightly tilted away from each other. Why? Because that's how you have to serve Hashem. I'm serving, but a few hours a day, I got to slightly focus on something else that is indirectly serving him, not directly. So the face is facing, but slightly away. Im calls it with all of this, ayimurim kamar ish viloyos, right? What they were doing is they were still, They were still facing in a way that is, the way the pasuk describes it, says, they open the luchos and, Kamash v'lo yisovim means like spirals around them. There was some kind of spiral structure, which means that essentially they were still in some kind of embrace of one another. So this is still face to face, but it's a slight tilt away. That's what's going on at Tehazah Shlomo Melech. Etc. It's still demonstrating intense closeness and relationship between God and us. That is the fundamental will of God. And yet, the Sovei says in brackets, Rabbi Shmuel. And he's clearly therefore going like Rabbi Shmuel. But according to the opinion that even in Shlomo Melech's time they were facing 100%, then he was saying it's like Rabbi Shimon Yochai. In other words, Shlomo Melech was setting up the ideal for his generation. And there's two opinions about what was the ideal. The first is that the ideal is slightly tilted away, i.e. you've got to work at least a little bit. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's idea is face to face, and he would say Shlomo Melech had them face to face. Okay. But still, why do you need both of them to be facing slightly away? Now, this is the point he's been waiting to get to. So let's go like Rabbi Shmuel. That you have to face slightly away. You have to have a few hours a day when you're also thinking about your parnasa and your earnings. Okay. So I get why the one that represents the humans is facing slightly away from God, but why isn't God still facing 100% directly to us? Right? He's saying, why do you have to have them slightly? The one that represents God's love of us should be exactly straight. We should be like faced a bit away, but God's completely facing. The one that represents our love for God is facing tiny bit away, but the one representing God's love for us should represent exactly directly. It's exactly as we've explained till now. This now concretizes in a very deep way exactly what we've been trying to say. The way God interacts with all the worlds and koichas, the powers, kulam, all their structures, and interrelationships, and all the structure of the different patterns of his interaction with us. It's always responsive to and reflective of the work that we do down here. So God's love for us will be transmitted exactly parallel to our connection to him.
Sorry, one more question,
the next slide. Yeah, let's take your questions. Okay, so let's go one by one here. First point you raised really is, what about somebody who's raised in a home that is not religious, where they couldn't know about God or whatever? So the Oren is facing the way the nation is facing, not every individual within the nation. Where's the nation as a whole? That's always the most important part of the relationship with God, is national, not individual. Okay, second of all, such a person, we don't judge how much they are growing in their relationship with God, but even if it's not overnight, right? It's, let's say the people as a whole were raised completely in idolatrous circumstances, as occasionally happens as a Jewish people, right? Often there was a lot of idolatry. So you imagine they're facing away from each other, but we've got to get them back towards each other. And that really addresses, you're saying you can get into this cycle. You can, but you can break out of it. And that's very linked to your, in other words, there's a long-term journey in which we want to get them back face-to-face, whether it's individually or in the case of the Kruvim, face-to-face means nationally. Now, your second question, but you've always got the image of the kind of the godliness inside us. He's going to get to that in later chapters. How does that work? Because that, in the end, is the root of our ability to come back to him. There's always something inside us seeking and searching. Basically, that's right, yeah. Yes, yes, that's exactly what you're saying. Yeah, literally. The more we face him, the more he, so to speak, faces us, right? Which means the more he interacts with the world in a particular way that's shining to us. If we're... It's certainly true, right, that we have a personal relationship with God, right? Sorry, good. It's certainly true that we've got a personal relationship with God. But the when we're talking about the Kruvim, one represents God facing the Jewish people, and one represents the Jewish people facing God.
Okay, so in this exact example, it's about...
Well, primarily and fundamentally, I mean, there's always multiple relationships with Hashem. But the most important one from a Jewish perspective is Klal Yisrael's relationship with Hashem. There's, of course, every individual has, right? But it's the Klal together. If you have to, like, prior, that's the key, right? And that's why we say, like, Haman and the Megillah could say to Achashverosh, the Jewish people are vulnerable, even though there's rabbis who are doing well and didn't assimilate, because they're one. They rise and fall together. And certainly the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol, goes in on behalf of the whole nation, gets atonement on Yom Kippur for the whole people as one. Right? We have to stand as one. In the end, that's what the whole of humanity will become. Right? First is Yisrael, but in the end is the whole world. It's all got to go back to one, like in Adam Arishon. So the kind of generic or universal or whole, the behavior of the whole is really, really, really important. And that's what's reflected in the Kruvim. Now, yes, of course, separately from that is every individual's relationship with Hashem, which is also really, really important. Okay. Did all this one second. Right, stimulated by what we do down here. And that's why that even down here we receive this kind of warmth from Hashem connecting to the world, so to speak. So as we have to turn, our level, we have to turn a little bit away from God, but we're 90% focused. So God interacts with the world in the same way, with a slight tilt away, just like we do. It reflects what we do. It's completely Hashem's choice. He's not bound by it. So that's why it's not forced in any way, but that's how he chooses to operate the system. Now let's go into the Haggah, into the note over here. For Al Pize, Yuvan Mamorim Zalman, this will explain the Gemara in Shabbos in the 9th chapter. Omar, one second. Just give me a second. Sorry. Apologies, guys. I'm sorry. Just quickly, got to do one thing. I'm back in. Literally, I'm gonna apologize. Okay. What's that? Okay, fine. Let's have a side. We're just starting the footnote again. I apologize. This now explains the Mamar of Chazal, the saying of the rabbis in Perek Tes to Shabbos in 9th chapter Shabbos Peches and Aleph. And what do we say? Amar Rav Chama Bar Chanina. So Rav Chama Chanina says, "Ma'idichsev, what's the meaning of the verse in Shir Shirim, Song of Songs? Kesapuch ba'atzeyar, like an apple in the forest. Lama nimshri solatapuch. Why are the Jewish people compared to an apple? V'ikshu Tosus Shomna. And then that's the Gemara there. And the Tosus there asks, "Daha b'hai kral la'yisrael nimshri solatapuch ela kadosh baruch hu k'dem sain kein daydi ben avonim." Tosus says, what do you mean? The question is, why are the Jewish people compared to an apple in the analogy in Shir Hashirim, the Song of Songs? And Tosus says, if you listen carefully to the verse, it's not the Jewish people being compared to an apple, it's God being compared to an apple, right? And here's an amazing thing. But based on our principle, we can answer. Once the Jewish people grasped God, and the metaphor that they were grasping with was that of an apple, it must be, you see God the way you are. And the way you feel God's relationship with you is the way you're relating to God. So yes, the literal meaning of the pasuk is a metaphor for God being like the tapuach, like the apple in the orchard, right, in the forest. But that means that we must be like the apple in the forest. And that's why, even though it's talking about God's relationship with us, the Gemara can legitimately say, why are we analogized to that? Because obviously we must be in order to give us the analogy of God being like that to us. Beautiful idea. He's got a lot of these amazing things that it all becomes so clear. To Kadesh Anachlu, Misraimi Lufanov, he's watching the way we appear before God. Kachul, he's watching my body rest. Eselamas, that's how he perceives and connects the worlds. Al Zea Drogov Ashir Mamash, literally on that level. The Lachain Shail Be'ezad Dobavinian Nistamu, Benimshri Sob Masim Ratsun Tabuch. So that's why the Gemara can then say, what is it about our actions? What is it about the way we're behaving that makes the analogy of the apple right, that we will then see God's actions with us that way? Ashal Yedeza Sigui Sposh Makinian Tabuch. Fine. The Lachain, and therefore, back to the main text, the Be'ez Kriyas Yamsov, at the time of the splitting of the sea to save the Jewish people in Egypt. God says to Moshe, "Why are you shouting to me? Dabel b'nei sovi so, speak to the Jewish people and go. Rotzo leimad davididu talya milse. It's up to you, not up to me. If you have total trust in me, says God, if you're willing to go and travel into the sea, right? That means you've relied your heart completely and not on fear. You have total trust. That means you have total trust in God. That's what's going to awaken the worlds above. If you have total dedication to God, God will have act the worlds like total dedication to you, which means bending laws of nature if necessary. If you have supernatural connection to God, God will have supernatural connection to you. Yes, okay, now that may be true, and Rabbi Shmuel might also say it's primarily the learning, everyone agrees learning and keeping a Torah is the primary. Right? The question is, but what is God wanting of you to do of the other stuff? And how much? As he put you in this world where you've got to, can't do 100% of the Can't just do 100%. They're learning, teaching, and keeping a Torah. You gotta do other things. Yes, that might be true. The analogy with the military, you're saying therefore they should be learning Torah all day. Different people, different skills, different talent. Yes, it's 100%. That's what's going on. But the question was, what's for the masses? Is it to be involved in the income or not? That's really the question. Okay, see, now he gets another quote from Song of Songs, Shir Shirim, right? That like the horse of the riders of Pharaoh, my beloved appears. What? Why are we comparing? It doesn't sound like a big compliment. I remember hearing a shir on this many, many years ago in Yeshiva, where the magnitude of Kalman Bear was giving us a shir about this, and he said that why would we see that as a compliment? Like, you know, you're trying to give compliments to the beloved. And you're saying you're like a horse in the that's not like a very great compliment. He says, no, this is what it means. Just like the horses of Paro, the opposite of the way the world is. Normally, if you're riding a horse, you are in control. Yet when it came to Paro and his army, they rode the rider. As the Medrash says, that's what happened, and that's why Sus the horse took its rider into the sea. That's what Hashem's punishment was. So the natural order of cause and effect turned around. The horse became in charge instead of the rider. So that's Dimisichim Shaltich Rayasi Al-Zaiv and Mamash, right? God is saying that's the analogy he's giving to us. Even though, of course, God is really controlling absolutely everything. But I'm letting you pull me. So even though really God is like the rider and we're like the horse, if you like, but it says God, I'm making the rules such that however you ride, I'm going to run the world that way. So it's like you're in charge. That's the key he's wanting to get to all of this. It's not you are in charge. It's not that you really can move things, but God says, as you behave, that's exactly how I'm going to move things. And that's exactly the parallel of the Kruvim. There's a relationship. It's that God looks at how we are to him, and that's how he runs the world. So in that sense, it's like we're in charge, but we're not really the soul of the world. But it's like we are, because God will constantly run the world in pattern and in parallel with that. The connection between me and the world, says God, I will only connect to the world. I choose only to connect to the world, says Hashem, and to pump spiritual energy and goodness into the world exactly parallel to the way that you operate. V'zeh she'amru, across with us, exactly the apostle says, Reitav Shomayim Bazrecha, that God who rides the heavens with your help. What does it mean with your help? With your help means he rides it. Of course, it doesn't need our help, but he rides the universe, i.e. directs the universe, according to the way we behave, and therefore it's like our help. And I say the service we do is the needs of the above. What it means is, of course, God doesn't need it, right? But he builds a world such that it's like he needs it. He builds a world such that there's a gap there that we're fulfilling. He could fill it if he wants to. He doesn't need us. But in some sense, he builds it so that his will, as it were, needs us. Okay. Fine. Let's just see. Do we have time to go a bit further? Okay, so I'm just thinking maybe we'll stop here and we'll do chapter 10 properly next week. This is a good place to stop over here. Any other questions? Ethan, did you have any questions? Anyone else have any questions? We're just the marker. Okay, good, fine. Good, so, yeah, sorry, yeah. No questions.
No questions.
No further questions, Your Honor. Okay, good. See you all next time in Yud Vashem.